in every city I go to, regardless of whether it's 2 people or 200. And the idea was simply first to help people by what I know or who I know. And then other people started helping people with what they knew and who they knew. And then even more importantly, I started learning what people are listening for and the commonality of what truly is interfering with people's potential. And so I have a unique perspective because I do this 200 days a year. Beyond the other stuff that I do, I probably have a better perspective of commonalities in critical life, business, personal issues to help facilitate. And then I love doing research, so I research these issues in my perspective of reconciling, you know, the spirit with the human experience, divine with the man-made constructs, quantifiable. And I think I excel in being able to help people with both, because I think too many people are always focusing on one thing, either sit at home and dream about what you want or go grind and get what you want. And obviously there's a harmony of the material, the monetization with the infinite and the power. For me, the infinite is really simple. It's knowing all information and all power. So if you believe you're part of all information and all power, then focusing in on and learning what you're doing to interfere with all the information and all the power that you're part of seems to be the best mechanism for living your human experience. And understanding human nature and the human experience, we can create this joy of an ability to feel good every day, to grow, to expand, instead of interfere or have dis-ease, live at ease. And so philosophies, theories, religions all really talk about being at ease, peace, harmony. They all use different words, but it just is, what are you doing to dissipate, dissolve, disappear the interference between you and that all-powerful and all-knowing that we all have access to? We don't have capability of utilizing all of it. Your human body couldn't handle all the energy that you have access to. Your mind and brain couldn't handle all the information you have access to. We're already seeing that with the cloud, right? It's a big problem. You have too much. So I'm here to help understand how to deal with personal, professional, spiritual, infinite, human experience type of questions that everyone has in a different vernacular. So the more you participate, the more I can help. And everybody knows, you know, first question is the hardest. So who has the first question?
How do you merge the spiritual world with the business world and stay in alignment?
Yeah, so for me, it's time. I think when you realize the human experience exists only in 24 hours a day, and you're guaranteed 24 hours every day, except for the last day of your life, cheated. Yeah, so think about it in this respect. How much time am I spending in my divine direction, harmonizing the personal, experiential, giving and receiving, the infinite and the pragmatic? So let me give you a simple formula that I've learned. So if the only thing that's certain about tomorrow is you get 24 hours, everything else is circumstantial. You can't tell me one thing that's gonna happen tomorrow except for there's gonna be 24 hours in your day. There's nothing you can tell me. You can't tell me the temperature, you can't tell me the interest rates, you can't tell me what a stock price is, can't tell me anything that's gonna happen guaranteed tomorrow, except for you 24 hours. So what I wanna do is take circumstances out of the equation. And so half of my life, and I made this decision a while back, I haven't been able to articulate it quite as simply as I do now, but I decided half of my life is gonna be non-circumstantial. Think how easy it is if you don't care what circumstances arise. So I said, number one, sleep. I'll get a sleep coach. 8 hours a day, I'm gonna be the best sleeper in the world to recover and access information to transcend, to help me with the rest of the day when I'm awake. So already a third of my life is non-negotiable. No matter what incidences, interest rates, delays, I don't care, I'm getting those 8 hours of sleep. Then I have the next 4 hours of non-negotiable behavior, non-circumstantial behavior. So I'm gonna give time to my health, my family, my finance, my faith, the study of time and the study of relativity. So now, every day, half of my day, but in essence, half of my life, is non-negotiable and non-circumstantial. So I don't care who calls me. I don't care what happens, because I know it's non-negotiable that these things that are critical and exponential are going to occur and give me what I desire in my divine direction or better. Now, my only tool that I can use for the circumstances of each day, the other half of my life, is to know what's important to me, not what's important to other people, what's missing, what I don't have, and to prioritize the day by circumstances and reprioritize and pre-prioritize and then prioritize again. And so many people aren't utilizing it. You don't have to use my simple methodology, but I will tell you, if you just start by knowing your non-negotiables, whatever that is, then you'll see the reconciliation of spirit and pragmatic. Because you have to have faith to have non-negotiable, non-circumstantial behavior, and you have to have pragmatic wisdom and prioritization to have circumstantial and prioritization. Hold on a second.
What's up, brother?
Yeah.
Hey, David. How are you?
Really good. Thank you guys for coming. That's cool. So I think time is the only way that we can truly understand the reconciliation that bothers so many people, why they lose faith or why they quit. So when you talk about the only reason people don't get to where they want to be or better, it's not the mistakes that they made. It's lack of commitment. What's commitment? Commitment is two things. It's the commitment is the desire, right? The desire that must be greater than your pain or purpose greater than pain, but it's also faith. Because you could have all the desire in the world to get something done, but if you don't have faith, what happens is there's no evidence that you're gonna get there, or the evidence is contrary, you're gonna get there. And if you don't believe there's something bigger than you that's protecting you, promoting you, loving and perfecting you, but not giving you the evidence that you think you know, but you know there's faith that they know better, that losing your job is the best thing that ever happened to you, or losing all your money is the best thing that ever happened to you, or even some people get sick and it's the best thing that ever happened to them because of the lesson they learn when it occurs, and they survive it because they seek the wisdom in it and have the faith and they don't lack commitment. Mistakes will never stop you. My favorite analogy of something I've been trying to explain for decades, the best way, besides the 50-50 split between negotiable and non-negotiable, circumstantial, non-circumstantial, is everything in my life now that I start or want, I say to myself, even my marriage, I have 1,000 steps I need to take to have a marriage better than I ever imagined, to be where I want to be in my marriage. That's very subjective, but I still say that because here's how it works. Or I say it's 1,000 steps to get my business where I want, or to get my child empowered to where I want, or to learn how to play golf. It's gonna be 1,000 steps to be where I wanna be as a golfer, whatever I wanna choose. Here's the lesson in it though, is that I know that I don't know how much time that's gonna take to get to 1,000 steps, ever. I never know how long it's gonna take. It's usually more time than I anticipated, it costs more money, I know that. But even if it takes less time or less money, which sometimes it does, I can't guarantee that, right? I only can guarantee I have 24 hours tomorrow to take steps. I know there's 24 hours tomorrow to take the steps. So here's the math that helps me so much with commitment. I know no step is equal, no step is the same material, texture, will last. Everything's different of each step. Sometimes I'm gonna have to take 3 steps backwards to get to 4 steps forward before I can go that, right? But I know one thing, it's gonna take approximately 90% of my time, my emotion, my money, value, to get to 250 steps. So regardless how much time it is, 10 years, it's gonna take me 90% of 10 years, and I'm only gonna be at 250 steps. So what's gonna happen perspective-wise? I'm gonna think in my head, I'm never gonna get there. This is taking 9 years and I'm only at 250 steps. I got another 750 steps. And I don't know how long that's gonna take, but what I do really know how long it's gonna take is after I get to 250 steps, I feel as if I'm a quarter of the way there. I know that's about 90% of the time, emotion, value, and money that's gonna cost me. And so I really have to now get intentional because it'll take less than 5% of the time, emotion, value, and money to get to 500 steps, and then another 5% or less to get to 1,000 steps. And then if I continue, it's only another 5% to get to 2,000 steps. That's how billionaires are made. That's why extraordinary people are made. Not because they're stronger, faster, better. They just don't lack commitment. They don't lack commitment. They're okay if they take three. They're okay if they slip and fall and hit their head. If a step is too tall at the time to go up and they got to figure out some kind of mechanism to go up it, they're okay with that because they know that the only way to get to where they want to be or better, if that's what they want, is to continue to keep on climbing. And it's going to always be exponential. Building a community, building a business, friendships, family, whatever it is, it takes time, and we don't know how much time it takes, but proportionally I know how much time approximately it takes. 90% of the time to get a quarter way there, then it's only 5% to get a halfway there and another 5% to get 100% there. That will keep you aligned. And here's the greatest thing. You could be 95% of the way there. So 95% of the time, emotion, value takes you to halfway there, and there still could be no evidence, or all the evidence could be completely against you, and it still will only take you another 5% to get all the way there, even when there's no evidence or the evidence is contrary. When I went bankrupt, I was only less than 5% of my effort, time, emotion, and value from being where I wanted to be. It took me 95% of the time to make over $100 million, lose it, 95% of the time compared to how much it took me to get back. And now I doubled it again with another, and now I'm gonna double it again with less effort and less effort. Anyone else have a question? Thank you for joining. Thank you.
How am I gonna determine your purpose in
life? So I don't believe we determine purpose. And I wasn't always under this philosophy or perspective. I believe we apply our purpose. I believe that God provides me purpose and I'm supposed to apply it. And I get choked up because it's hard for people to distinguish the difference. You have no faith if you're searching for something you already have. Right? So many people tell me, I believe in God. I'm like, oh, and what is your God like? Omniscient? Yeah. All powerful? Yeah. Loves you more than your mom? Absolutely. Well, you have faith then? Yeah. Yeah, but I'm in search for my why. No, you just told me your why. You just told me there's an omniscient, all-powerful, all-knowing source, and you're a resource of that source, and you tell me you don't have your why? You just don't know how to apply it. So let's figure out what you're doing to interfere with the application of your why. The purpose that you have is already derived within the birth of you as a human. So I tell people all the time, you're not in search of a why. You're not in search of anything. You already have it. Let's figure out what you're doing to interfere with it. Unless you don't have faith, then let's work on figuring out what you're comfortable and confident in believing in that will give you faith when there's no evidence or the evidence is contrary to where you want to be to continue your purpose, because your purpose always has to be greater than your pain. The application of your purpose, the application of your why has to be greater than your pain. If it's not, you'll quit. That's why so many people have to hit rock bottom, because they have purpose and the pain's not great enough. Every time they feel a little pain, mommy take care of it. Or somebody else does something, they put them into rehab and whatever it is. Why people have to hit rock bottom is because for the first time in their life, they're like, fuck, I gotta increase my purpose because this pain is so great. Or they say the pain is too great, I'm gonna quit. And then they do terrible things. Behaviors are only determined to be good or bad, determined on where you want to be. I used to think that there was good behavior and bad behavior. There's not. Good behavior is aligned with where I want to be or better. Bad behavior interferes with it. If I want to be somewhere different than you want to be, my behavior, my good behavior may be your bad behavior. But if I want to be a great golfer, and going to the range would be good behavior. If you wanted to be a great swimmer, going to the range would be bad behavior. But too many people think morality exists somewhere in the conscious, but it doesn't. Morality exists in the subconscious. At a conscious level, if it existed in a conscious level, then the idea between what is legal and what is not legal would always be the same compared to what's moral and what's not moral. People were sentenced to death because they smoked marijuana. They're no longer bad. Marijuana was really bad. No, they're confusing. Breaking the law can be considered bad. But is it really, was Rosa Parks bad? Was that bad behavior because she broke the law? No, because why? It was aligned with where she wanted to be or better. So the arbitrary and capriciousness of the consciousness has to be derived in the subconscious of what we believe we want and being able to make those decisions each day which why, once again, dividing your day by non-negotiable behavior and negotiable behavior makes your life so easy, because you take the activities that you know you want to aggregate, compound, and accelerate in your life. My health, my sleep, my family, my finance, my faith, the study of relativity and time. Those are the things, no matter what happens tomorrow, are going to be most important to me. I don't care what happens tomorrow, so half of my day is going to be spent sleeping, on my health, on my family, on my finance, on my faith, on the study of relativity and the study of time. And then the other half, I just got to be good at prioritizing and keep getting better at by what I want, not what other people want, what's missing, and what I don't have. And so for me, that formula keeps on helping me help other people understand and get at ease with what they want, not what other people want, what's missing, and what you don't have. Perfect. All right, next question. Chris.
So I know you love great questions. So driving here from Tampa, I was like, I want to ask Dave a really good question. But you answered it. The question would have been, this morning at 6:40 a.m., you said, it reminded me, I wait for things or I accept things in divine time. But I also know you're a big proponent of the acceptable level of human progress is not fast enough. So I was trying to think, how do they go hand in hand? But I think when you explain the 1,000 steps, that answered it, so there's no point. So I'll go to my number two.
Yeah, just one clarification, right? Think about outcomes differently. So there's a difference between attaching an emotion, I'll be happy when, to an outcome, which requires man-made constructive time. I need this much money by the end of the month. I need to hit this number. I need to do these things. That's attaching your emotions to the outcome. Compared to using velocity and faith, I'm going to double the amount of money that I make as fast as I can. What would you rather do? Make $1 million by the end of the year or double the amount of money as fast as you can?
Double the amount.
Of course, but so many people are still worried about making $1 million by the end of the year. That's, I can't wait till I make this. I can't wait till I get married. No, I can wait. That's divine time, but I'm not going to wait in the pursuit of what I want. For me, I'm enjoying what I don't love or don't love. I'm enjoying what other people don't love or like every day without quitting, because I know if I do that, enjoy the consistent, persistent pursuit of my potential, what I want, not what other people want or what's missing, that life will give me all its secrets. It'll give me the cheat codes. It'll make life easy by showing me the dis-easy, the interference between me and what I want. Second question.
So the second question is, congratulations once again on being the chairman of the Napoleon Hill Institute for the corporate division. What are some of the things you could speak about now that you see for that, or what you're going to bring to the world, and how that aligns with your major purpose of impacting and helping 1 billion people?
Well, Napoleon Hill to me is the seminal personal development leader of our century. So most of the thought leaders, personal development leaders, all derive their information from either Think and Grow Rich, Outwitting the Devil, or How to Sell Through Life, or other concepts and theories that Napoleon Hill had, lessons that he taught. So for me, knowing how complex it is in today's world with information, that I find the simple lessons of Napoleon Hill to be repeated and explained around the world will have the greatest impact on the world's mindset, heartset, and handset. So Napoleon Hill wasn't just a great business or entrepreneur or teacher, although he has, you know, great lessons of how to get rich financially, but he's, for me, has the simplest formulas for two things: how to live your life in definite purpose and how to control your impulse. And that formula, explained the way that he does, to have definite purpose in what you want, not what other people want, what's missing, and to control your impulse, in other words, the dis-ease, spending less time in that, I want to be a huge part of it. And I think that they have had it handled for 100 years on the personal development side. And so what they've needed is a corporate leader to have the corporate leaders in the world, non-political, but the corporate leaders from the Middle East and Asia, South America, North America, Canada, wherever they are, all utilize the same mindset, heartset, and handset in order to effectuate abundance. Everyone making more money, helping more people, and having more fun. All right, next question. Marianne? A good one.
Okay, I wrote them down this time. You emphasize the importance of providing value first. What is the practical way business owners can measure whether we are truly giving more than we take?
So you should never give more than you take, because giving and receiving are one. So I think it's a big misnomer that people trade giving. They say, the more I give, the more I receive. And I don't believe that to be an automatic process. I believe that to be true. But just listening to this negotiation that occurs, I'm going to give you value before I ask for any value. But that's predetermining that when I ask you for value, when I give you an opportunity that you're capable of helping me, somehow doesn't bring value to you. When you'll tell me the greatest feeling in your life when you're able and capable of helping someone else. So we get mistaken when you say, oh, I give value first. Giving value first may be giving someone an opportunity to be capable of helping someone else, which is a great value to them, because we feel so much more value when we're capable of helping other people get to where they want to be. And so what I like to teach people is, one, give everything, but elevate your awareness to all that you're given by giving everything. Be gracious in receiving all that you're given, and then ask for more. So you can give more, be given more, receive more, ask for more than more, give more than more, be given more than more, receive more than more, ask for more than more than more. And don't be confused that giving is actually you disposing of something to someone else. It could be providing an opportunity for someone else to give. And if you don't believe me, biochemically, God will direct you by giving you rewards. And so when you give, dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, and endorphins are released. It's a doggy biscuit of happiness. So my logical mind says, hey, this is good behavior. Here's a biochemical response to say, hey, you feel good, this is good, you should give. When you receive, same doggy biscuit. So that tells me God's saying, you know, it's good to receive, just as good as giving. But how about this one? When people witness giving and receiving, they receive a doggy. That's why TV and movies work. You're not there, but your dopamine is watching it, and you're like crying because an act of kindness on the screen. Same thing with cortisol. You attack someone, they're attacked, or people witnessing attacks, guess what's released? Cortisol, disease. I think God's pretty obvious saying, hey, this is not the behavior that's going to get you to where you want to be or better. This is going to interfere with your potential. This is interfering with your information and your energy, because I'm going to give you an actual human response to do so. So in the infinite loop, there is no trade or negotiation. Giving and receiving are one, to the giver, the receiver, and the witnesser. Yeah. So first of all, to be a great leader and a great parent, we have to be annoying. So we have to be repetitive and honest. We also have to know that the reason we have to be repetitive and honest is people don't get things the first time. We just simply are planting seeds. Sometimes we're planting seeds under trees that we never will get under. I personally will continue, and I have been in the maximum frustration with my own daughter, my own surrogate son, Nick, every other leader in my company, because in my mind, there's no way that they don't know something. After how repetitive, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, beating it in, every exercise guide, every speech that they've listened to, every video they've edited, whoever they are, and I can say, hey, what are the 5 daily practices, or what's the 5 to thrive, or whatever the principles are that I'm teaching aligned with Napoleon Hill or not, I'm amazed they don't know it, and then I realize that's part of the process. My job is to be annoying, consistent and honest, every day, hey, this is what it is, and asking questions, giving suggestions, but not giving up on them either. And I can't want it more than they want it. So for me, I go beneath the lesson and say, are you doing your best? Are you learning lessons and are you having fun? So if they're not gonna do their best, learn lessons and have fun, they're never gonna learn it. You're just, find somebody else. But a lot of times, they're watching you more than they're listening. They're slowly but surely, a light will go on. How many times did that happen to you? Maybe even with stuff that I teach, all of a sudden you hear something that I've said so many different times and it just clicks, go, ah. But if, what if I stop saying it? What if I just stopped saying it before it clicked? I know I've read The Course in Miracles for 10 years and lesson 70 today, I read for the 10th time. And I said, oh shit. I see, right? This means something completely, this is a powerful thing right here. Because it's aggregating on all the different things. So don't quit. All right, next question. Yes, sir.
What kind of exercise would you say would be the best way of finding out your purpose, like your North Star?
Yeah. So we discussed that. See, even being in a meetup, you start seeing commonality of what people are listening for. So what I'm deriving from the question is so many people are searching for their purpose and they don't know how to explain purpose. What I explained earlier too is that I believe we apply our why, that purpose already exists. What we want to do is figure out what we're doing to interfere with the purpose. So are we moving wrong? Are we eating wrong? I start with the four, by the way, basic necessities of being alive. Because if you can take care of not interfering with your potential, your purpose, your why, with just the four things that God has told us in the human experience are most important. How would God tell us these four things are the most important? I'll tell you why. If you don't eat, you die. Maybe God thinks that eating is important. So now I know, what am I doing eating-wise to interfere with my potential? Because that must be a really important thing to focus in on. Two, drinking. What am I drinking? How much am I drinking? I know God thinks drinking is important for the human experience because if I don't drink, I die. Breathing. You think God thinks breathing is important? Well, he's made it very clear for all of us, if we don't breathe, we die. But most people don't pay attention or prioritize these things. Even God's made it obvious that you better practice these things or they're gonna interfere with your why, your purpose. It's not gonna let you live your potential. And what's the last thing? Sleep. I'm going to make you sleep a third to a quarter of your entire life. And if you don't sleep, you will die. But nobody pays attention to it. They'll go to bed at night, wake up more tired than went to sleep, not even think twice about it. Most people won't stop breathing and not think twice about it, drinking or eating and not think about it. But sleeping, they will. And they do that for a lot longer than they eat, sleep. Breathing we do all the time. So you definitely want to prioritize the way we breathe. So I ask myself when I look for purpose or teach people purpose or apply purpose, I say, let's work at just necessities, the basics. What are you doing eating-wise? What are you doing drinking-wise? What are you doing breathing-wise? And what are you doing sleeping-wise? Then the next one would be movement. What are you doing movement-wise to interfere with your potential? Now you can get to the nitty-gritty.